Day 2, Government Shutdown 2013. This time, however, we were prepared. The top 100 single from 1995, Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise. 1995, the last time the government shut down. Back then, it was a crisis, uncharted waters for the federal government, unclear protocols, but thanks to Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton, today there are detailed plans and contingencies in Washington. We are so good at shutting down the government. We've had practice, and we're apparently going to get better at it. A dear friend of mine, who until recently actually ran the Office of Personnel Management for the federal government in D.C. and is a veteran of the 1995 days, knows all about those plans, but he's been appointed ambassador to Australia recently, and last night he emailed me gently to say he was quite happy to be 14,000 miles away from D.C. on this week. But our next guest, Sally Katzen, knows the process very well. She was part of the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget team, that prepared for the last government shutdown during the Clinton administration in 1995, 1996. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Sally, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
How was the government prepared in 1995, and how do you think the experience of 1995 informs what's been going on this week?
Well, the mechanics are essentially the same. We saw it coming. There was a dispute between the Congress and the president as to budget issues, and we had been presented with a bill that had a lot of riders on it. That's technical terms for policy positions attached to the money bill that were unpalatable, and the president threatened to veto, and if he did, there would be no funds to continue the government. And we knew he was going to do this. So we saw it coming. We were able to make some plans. We were able to decide who was accepted. I think the term now is essential, and who regrettably was not. And then we moved into implementation. So the As you say, the game plan, although this is not a game, was set, and it was easy, relatively, although painful, to put it in motion. There are, however, very significant differences between the 95-96 shutdown, and that was plural. There were two of them, than the current situation.
And we'll talk about those differences in a second. Let's continue down memory lanes here a little bit and remember just what it was like and how really shocked President Clinton was speaking about the government shutdown in December of 1995. Listen.
The Congress has refused to pass legislation that would keep the federal government open to serve the American people. This has never happened before for this length of time in the whole history of the Republic. And it's been very hard on 750,000 public servants who have to pay rent and utilities and mortgage payments and buy food.
Now there's more than 750,000 public servants who are affected by this shutdown. The president there sounds very, very frustrated. But at that moment that you were engaging this process, was there any precedent at all? Was there any orderly kind of procedure that you could go to, you know, in case of government shutdown, break glass, that sort of thing?
No, we had some anecdotal information available to us, but we were essentially trying to deal with things as they materialized. And one of the problems was the uncertainty as to how long it would take. It's one thing to plan a shutdown for a couple of days. It's something else if you know it's going to be a couple of months. There isn't a business in this country that would accept the parameters of absence of planning for their operations, and yet that's what we were presented with, not only from the management of the process, but the people who were affected, who were home, didn't know whether they would be home for one day, one week, one month, and that uncertainty has an incredibly destructive quality to it.
I want to talk about that in just a second. As people were sitting at home with that uncertainty, this was the extent of the process that they were able to observe. Here's Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich talking to the press about how he apparently was going to help get the government out of this mess back in 1995.
Well, let me just say, I think the minute we have a budget agreement that we should be able to get something through the House within hours that would take care of all the current problems. The Negotiations will begin tomorrow. I think we should meet every day as long as we need to each day until we get it done.
And there, Newt Gingrich is really pointing out one of the differences inadvertently between 1995 and today. There really aren't negotiations going on today, and there's not as clear a set of arguments today as there was in 1995 or a set of issues. Would you agree with that?
I definitely would agree with that. First, there are no negotiations, and second, the issue is much more complicated. From what you can see in the news media, the issue is less about budget than about health care. And the irony is that shutting down the government does not dramatically affect the rollout of the health care law. So you have a disconnect there, and that creates frustrations that are very, very difficult to handle. There's also a different economic context, and this is important. In 1995, 1996, we had a very healthy, robust economy. We are now in the midst of a fragile recovery, and the actions to shut down the government today follow on a sequester that has been in effect for the summer that has led these same employees who are being shut out of their offices today to have taken 4, 5, 7, 8 days of unpaid leave during the summer.
That's the first time I've heard anyone say that, and that's crucial to remind people. We're talking with Sally Katzen, senior advisor at the Podesta Group, visiting professor at NYU Law School. She was an administrator at the Office of Management and Budget during the 1995-1996 government shutdown. There's an Article 1 of the Constitution, which is all about Congress, and there's an Article 2 of the Constitution, which is all about the executive branch. Does this play, or did it back in 1995, play as one part of government against another, the Congress essentially doing something to inflict pain, literal pain, on the executive?
I don't think we saw it that way. I think that we appreciated that there were deeply held different views and that some common ground had to be found. We thought that the shutting of the government was an inappropriate action to take to realize their ambitions or objectives, however you might put it. But I think it's less a separation of powers and constitutional argument. The House has the power of the purse. Congress allocates the funds. The president executes the law. That assumes you want the government to function. That assumption may not hold today. And we're faced – the other difference, I think, that is important to note is that in 95, with the first shutdown, which lasted only 5 days, there were already 3 appropriations bills that had been passed and signed by the president, military construction, agriculture, and water and energy. But by the time the second shutdown came in December, this was the one that lasted 20-some days, there were 4 more appropriations bills that had been passed: defense, transportation, Treasury Postal, and of course the legislative branch. That meant that for those departments, they were unaffected by the shutdown. So we had about half of a shutdown. Now we have a whole shutdown.
Totally
working.
And
that's a big difference.
We're totally working without a net this time around. Sally Katzen, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Sally Katzen is the senior advisor at the Podesta Group, a visiting professor at NYU Law School, administrator at the Office of Management and Budget during the 1995's government shutdowns. So what's going on here? All of the colorful metaphors.
This is Jay from Leicestertown, Maryland, and I think the government shutdown is a sign of dysfunction. Our lawmakers are behaving like petulant children, and the American people are paying the price.
Thank you, Jade, and we are happy to hear more colorful metaphors about all of this at 877-8-MY-TAKE. But what is going on here? The American system provides for open-ended debate and the consideration of minority views on issues. It's one of the distinctive features of U.S. democracy. But has that system of checks and balances, advice and consent been corrupted by what's going on here?
This is Chase Robinson calling from Austin, Texas, and I don't see how anyone can view the situation as anything but an example of government dysfunction. Whether or not you agree with the goals of either side, we can all agree, I think, that this form of governance by crisis is inefficient in the extreme.
This is Cameron calling from Livermore, California. This is a great example of systemic failure of what we call democracy. Incessant partisan lockstepping for fear that if one does not vote with the party, one's party's corporate backers won't pay for one's reelection. You couldn't impede human progress more effectively if you tried.
So dysfunction, you say. This is not some chaotic celebration of differing views. As you say in Salt Lake City, Utah, the government shutdown is a clear sign of a broken system. When the whole government comes to a stop over a single issue, one must question both parties' inability to compromise and what their true motivations really are. You know, an overwhelming number of you wrote to vent your frustrations like this with Congress. But there were a few, it ain't pretty, but we're learning we can do without Washington views as well.
Robin Shaw, Ludlow, Kentucky. And I think that people should remember that all the federal employees that are currently getting the day off without pay, or however long it may be, they are non-essential personnel. And people should remember that that is exactly what it sounds like. It's non-essential. Shouldn't be there anyway.
Glenn Simpson. I just say let them fight it out. Heck, the USA, man, we're the greatest country in the world. We'll get it done.
Ah, maybe a reality show, wrestling with the lawmakers, eh, Doug? Al Sullivan wrote this on Facebook. The system is designed to make dramatic change hard to do. This same system prevented many of the worst proposed abuses of the Bush administration. Now the shoe is on the other foot, and Democrats are up in arms. The Tea Party are selfish, arrogant, ignorant people, but they have a right to work the system like anybody else. Very thoughtful comment there, Al. Later this hour, we're going to look at this tension between minority and majority in our constitutional democracy. But take our poll at thetakeaway.org. Who's at fault here? As of earlier today, 83% of you found the Republicans at fault, 4% for the Democrats, 5% blame Obama, 8% say everyone is to blame for the shutdown. Go to thetakeaway.org to tell us what you think. It's not a scientific poll, but you'll be interested in the results. And Tom from Seattle reminds us that maybe there's a limited incentive for our representatives up on Capitol Hill to do anything at all about this.
Just a reminder that all those members of Congress are getting paid during the government shutdown.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Be a part of the conversation. Stay tuned for our thoughtful discussion later this hour. And find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thetakeaway.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.